Hello, and welcome to the Community Mennonite Church podcast. Today, we have a sermon by Pastor Jason Gerlach.
In metropolitan areas across our country, it doesn't take long to spot signs that say, if you see something, say something. Often in bright yellow letters or on yellow poster board, this phrase serves as a reminder of both the evil and fragility of life. Painted on subway steps, the rear end of public transit buses, and posted on billboards near all venues of transportation, the Department of Homeland Security and the Metropolitan Transit Authority encourage and rely on the eyes of passengers. Keep a look out for seemingly forgotten book bags. Keep a lookout for suspicious activity. The nearest example to us is in the foyer of the Rockingham County Regional Jail. In the poster, a woman stares off to her left, a flip phone to her ear. In bold letters, the Department of Homeland Security encouraged anyone passing by, if you see something, say something. Now this phrase, for very many years into the future, may be associated with suspicion. Be aware. Look out. It's taken on a pejorative connotation. And whenever given the chance, the Department of Homeland Security, Metropolitan Transit Authority, publicize the thousands of times that New Yorkers, Bostonians, or others have recently saw something and said something, de-escalating a potentially hazardous situation. This phrase may never again be associated with celebration or recognition of the remarkable things that we see every day. At a different time, that wasn't so. En route to Jerusalem, the crowd around Jesus increased, and from what they could see about Jesus, from what they had heard, they wanted to proclaim. They had seen something that they appreciated, and they said something. Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord. This phrase grew in intensity, was shouted by many. They waved palm branches and threw down their cloaks. They couldn't contain their joy. And no wonder the celebration, no wonder the mob mentality. These people looked for a reprieve from a lifetime of heaviness and oppression. At last, this Jesus will take hold of Jerusalem. Maybe even a wisp of smugness laced the festivities. Finally, the powers that were in place, their reign would come to an end. Anticipation and joy. Within the past 2 weeks, Wendy and I watched our son Jacob barely contain his own anticipation. Throughout all of the winter months, he saved his money, more or less following the little rule called save a dollar every day for the amount of the cost. Sorry, I butchered that. Save a dollar per day in anticipation of purchasing 2 pigs this spring. Jacob researched Craigslist, he listened regularly to the Homesteady podcast, and he read books on caring for animals. He has one with him this morning. He sought out Matt Gingrich, Nick Pimichter, Rick Yoder, Lee Good, and Greg Yoder. In mid-February, one Sunday after church, he shared with me how much he enjoyed Sunday morning, listing his appreciation for song, his appreciation for sermon, his appreciation for congregational sharing time and being able to catch up with the farmers in the congregation. A week ago, yesterday, Jacob brought home two Hereford Cross pigs. He quickly named them Alice and Little. He enjoys rubbing their bellies and providing for their needs, clean bedding, feed mash, friendship. But even more, he enjoys proclaiming. The time of anticipation has passed. Now is the time to proclaim. Strike up a conversation with him. Won't take you long to pick up on it. And recently, I've seen the same thing in a number of people in this congregation. Christian Gaiman recounted the success of his team's robot in a recent robotics tournament. Hadley Jenner told two stories at an outreach commission meeting about connections being made through faith in action. 14 Venture Club children, that's third grade through fifth grade, spent Friday night in the fellowship hall. They greeted one another with smiles, and their excitement showed as they eagerly laid out their sleeping bags. Last week, when I arrived at Asbury United Methodist Church, Ruby and Tom Sawin shared with me how many from this congregation pitched in during our week of hosting open doors thermal shelter. Tom said, "Look at these loaves of freshly baked bread by Jonathan Nofziger. They're beautiful." And then Ruby told me about how much she enjoyed watching Sam Wise help before the week even started. Sam isn't old enough to be at open doors when people are seeking shelter, but beforehand, he ran around placing a pillow at each mat. He also helped his parents bake chocolate chip cookies for Thursday evening supper. That crowd that surrounded Jesus, overjoyed, increasing in number, proclaiming louder and louder, pointing out what they saw and saying something. That crowd had no idea the depth of what lay ahead. But we do. We smile confidently as Easter approaches. It's just a few days until we celebrate Christ's resurrection. Sure, the betrayal isn't fun, neither is remembering Christ's death. But next Sunday, all of this heaviness will be over. But what the crowd then, and so often now, seeks to avoid is the truth that if we follow Jesus into Jerusalem, humiliation and death await us. On this Sunday, Palm Sunday, I've often heard Jesus described as a fool. How ridiculous it must have been to see Jesus riding on a colt instead of a majestic, regal horse. How ridiculous it must have been if, as recorded in Matthew's gospel, Jesus straddled the backs of both a donkey and a colt at the same time. How is that even possible? What does that look like? But claims of Jesus' foolishness are lost on me. The crowd wasn't jeering. They were celebrating. They didn't consider this man foolish. It may, however, have been unwise to sit upon an untrained colt, especially a colt that had no familiarity with Jesus or the disciples. Just recently, I've wondered whether the farmers in that crowd took notice of this fact. Untrained colts, untrained animals, any of them, are wild or frisky. Can't you just imagine Jesus' procession to Jerusalem full of fits and spurts, constant calls to slow down, and white knuckles? On the Saturday, we brought home Jacob's piglets. We needed to head to baseball practice almost immediately. Within 45 minutes of arriving at the Broadway ball fields, Wendy called me to tell me that the pigs were free in the backyard. They were running, they were rooting, their wildness couldn't be contained. I returned home and together, Wendy, Nora, Willa, and I, Jacob missed out because he had to stay at baseball, we grabbed some boards and we chased these two
little piglets around the backyard.
Finally, we got them into the pen, and our youngest, Willa, played a crucial role by shaking a stuffed animal at them so that the pigs wouldn't consider running in her direction. It worked. Our attempts to train them, even this past week, to an electric fence haven't fared any better. They've gotten out 4 times. Untrained animals are a handful. Interestingly enough, there is no mention of Jesus' procession on an untrained colt going awry. The colt remained docile. When it left its owner and went with Jesus' disciples, the colt remained docile amidst waving palms, flapping cloaks, and things laid down on its back and in its path. It remained docile when Jesus climbed. It didn't spook, but followed Jesus' commands and carried him amidst the celebratory shouts. As indicated by the procurement of the colt and its willingness, all that was happening had to have been in God's hands. Jesus trekked hill and dale over Israel for several years. He would not suddenly have ridden a colt the last kilometer or two because he was suddenly too tired. All that was happening was in God's hands. And all that would happen next would also be in God's hands. Riding the crest of the crowd's enthusiasm, Jesus approached Jerusalem. It was here, gazing across the Kidron Valley at Jerusalem, that Jesus wept. These tears weren't an indication of an outpouring of joy. He simply hadn't gotten caught up in the moment. It was as if the music, the celebration, all the hullabaloo, all of it, suddenly ceased. And Luke's gospel, the only gospel account to include this description of Jesus' emotion, halts Jesus' procession toward Jerusalem. Everything stops. And looking toward Jerusalem, Jesus cried. Why? Why in this process did he cry? Was it disappointment? Jerusalem had contained all manner of blasphemy, all manner of idolatry and soul-sucking violence. Yet Jerusalem also symbolized so much of what Jesus loved. From this vantage point across the Kidron Valley, Jerusalem must have looked both like the most beautiful and the most painful scene at the same time. Amidst his tears, Jesus said, "If this day you only knew what makes for peace, but now it is hidden from your eyes. For the days are coming upon you when your enemies will raise up a palisade against you. They will encircle you, and they will hem you in on all sides. They will not leave one stone upon another." All the things pertinent to Jerusalem's health and peace had been laid out in the law and the prophets, echoed in the Psalms, but in so much of Israel's history, so even now, all of the things related to peace are hidden from its inhabitants. Jerusalem has not learned the things that make for peace, and so in coming years, devastation will come to them by a Roman army. How could they have overlooked the numerous warnings about their destruction? It's not difficult to understand Jesus' emotion as disappointment. I can only imagine that Jesus remains disappointed with us when our attempts at peace include isolation from those we fear, when it includes annual increases to defense budgets, when it includes an ever-growing military-industrial complex. Or maybe Jesus' emotion surfaced because he knew he had nearly reached a goal. It was now within sight. There is nothing so wholesome
so satisfying as the exhaustion associated with having completed an assigned task. The sacrifice involved in hard work leads directly to the satisfaction of achievement. So it is in our religious lives. It involves embracing the pain and sacrifice. It involves making dreadfully difficult decisions. It involves the refusal of compromise, even our highest ideals. But the payoff is the most remarkable sense of personal joy. From this point, celebration, anticipation, joy, the crowd's energy growing louder and louder. It will only be a few days until the same crowd yells, "Crucify him! Crucify him! Crucify him!" "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord" has quickly changed into "crucify him." Their anticipation is gone. There are no longer anyone joyous. It's a few days later. They're shouting in opposition against the one that they had just recently celebrated. The tune and tone has drastically changed. Many yelled, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" Others took in the scene silently. What they don't realize is that the most important time to proclaim, to speak up, to celebrate, is in the midst of Jesus' last days. It's even more important now to proclaim when accolades dry up and criticism prevails, when lies and betrayal stalk, when the powerful rebound after a moment when it seemed their power had wavered, when mockery and arrest have followed and a death sentence have been ordered, and when the one thought to be conqueror of Jerusalem hangs on a cross. Today, if we don't proclaim Christ's kingdom in the face of oppressive governments sprinkled in all corners of the world, if we don't proclaim Christ's kingdom in the face of unrestrained power, in the face of wrongful treatment and suspicion of our neighbors, we'll soon find ourselves either aligned, shouting against the new rule we previously celebrated, or we'll find that we've fallen silent. For the next 30 seconds, I'd like you to consider, think about it. Consider this morning's question: when have you felt part of God's story? Maybe you've been swept up in a newfound joy, feeling giddy with anticipation, and you feel there's nothing better than adding your voice to the celebration of God's coming kingdom. Maybe you consider first the people who support you each day, your small group, your family, people in the community or in this congregation who helped you connect to God's story. Maybe you've experienced God in a new way through this 40-day journey through Lent. If so, proclaim it. If you've seen something, say something. By doing so, we'll provide balance. Together, we'll name the good around us, as well as keep watch to de-escalate potentially hazardous situations. Here's the thing. If we don't find balance, if we don't proclaim Christ at work in our lives, if we remain silent, we'll miss opportunities to share how we have felt part of God's story. As Jesus warns, if we remain silent, the stones will proclaim in our place. Over time, any church who doesn't proclaim the many ways God is at work becomes fossilized into its own past. The church becomes an archaeological dig rather than a living faith community that celebrates seeing God say and do new things. Since we're always changing, since our context is always changing, it's essential that we name how God's Spirit is beginning and continuing a good work in our lives. May we celebrate with actions and words. May we add our voice to those around us proclaiming, "Blessed is the King who comes in the name of the Lord." When we see something, let's say something. Don't hesitate to highlight Christ's coming kingdom, for our hope is in the Lord. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Community Mennonite Church podcast. Our theme music is a setting of John Wesley's text, "Jesus, I Believe You're Near," composed by Matt Carlson. Jeremy Nafziger arranged it for strings. To learn more about our congregation or to plan a visit, please check out our website at cmcva.org.